You are listening to episode number 34 of the Secondary Science Simplified podcast. Now, I know some of you get your class schedules back in April when you sign your contract, while others of you listening are left hanging on until the last minute thanks to a nicely worded clause in your contract that essentially says that your admin can make you teach anything at all, totally different, even at the last minute. So you may be listening and you may have known your preps for months now and you've been able to spend all summer getting ready, while others of you listening are forced to panic scramble because you just got an email saying you're teaching physics for the first time. So wherever you are this back to school season, the Secondary Science Simplified podcast is here to support you. Last week in episode 33, I shared 5 beginning of the year suggestions regardless of your content area. But over the next few weeks, I'll cover episodes that are content specific so that you can walk into this school year with confidence. This week's episode specifically is for all of you out there teaching biology this school year. You know I had to start this series with biology since it is my all-time favorite course to teach. In this episode, I'm going to share with you 4 things not to do when you teach biology and 3 bonus strategies as well, because I couldn't just stop at 4. And I hope that all of these things will set you up for success if this is your first time teaching the course, and also challenge you in a good way if you're a veteran bio teacher. Excited to hear more? I cannot wait to share this episode with you. Let's get started. This is Secondary Science Simplified, a podcast for secondary science teachers who want to engage their students and simplify their lives. I'm Rebecca Joyner from It's Not Rocket Science. As a high school science teacher turned curriculum writer, I'm passionate about helping other science teachers love their jobs, serve their students, and do it all in only 40 hours a week. Are you ready to rock the time you spend in your classroom and actually have a life outside of it? You're in the right place, teacher friend. Let's get to today's episode. Now, before we really get into today, I want to make sure I don't miss a chance to invite you to participate in a little back to school giveaway. If you listened to last week's episode, you know that we've reached over 10,000 downloads of the Secondary Science Simplified podcast, and I'm just so grateful. So to prep for back to school season, I want to give away a $100 gift card to the It's Not Rocket Science resource shop and mail one of you an It's Not Rocket Science Arctic mug. So to enter, all you have to do is share about your favorite Secondary Science Simplified episode thus far on Instagram. And then just tag me at It's Not Rocket Science so that I can see your entry. Now, if your account is private, you may just want to go ahead and screenshot your post and DM it to me just so I can make sure that I see it. I will randomly select a winner on August 15th to send all of the goodies to you, so make sure you enter before then. Now, let's talk about teaching biology. I think if we're all honest with ourselves, there's only so much we can learn in our undergraduate courses or our student teaching experiences or our alternative certification programs, if that's the route that brought you into the teaching world. And at the end of the day, so much that I've learned about being a teacher and teaching biology specifically has been through a lot of trial and error. And if we want to get fancy, we could call this action research in my classroom, as my graduate professors would have referred to it. Bless my poor student guinea pigs, am I right? I think of all those mistakes I made in my first few years teaching in particular, and I just know I still have so much I can learn, and that is one of the main reasons why I love to make it a priority to bring in guests to the podcast, and I'm especially excited about the 2 guests we have coming this month, so stay tuned. But even though I am personally still forever in the learning process, I want to pause and share with you 4 things to not do when teaching biology, to learn from my own mistakes, because I want to help prevent other teachers from learning things the hard way like I had to. So first and foremost, if you are teaching biology this year, I urge you, do not teach macromolecules in an isolated biochemistry unit. When you look at the entire scope of topics that we cover traditionally in a Biology 1 course, macromolecules are truly foundational to every single thing that we teach. So why is it that it has kind of become standard practice to teach carbs, lipids, proteins, and nucleic acids in an isolated biochem unit. If you're teaching biology this year, I really want you to consider teaching macromolecules early in your unit sequence and then integrating them into every subsequent unit thereafter. Personally, I like to kick off the year teaching macromolecules within my very first unit, which I call biology basics. And then I make a point in every unit after that to incorporate macromolecules. There are test questions on macromolecules in every single unit. There is not one unit of mine that doesn't have at least one reference back to them, but often way more than that. I also really like starting the year with macromolecules because it sets the precedent from our very first unit that all of biology builds on itself and it is incredibly integrated. You can't just cram the night before the test to make it through the unit. I want my students to know from the very beginning that true understanding is required for them to have success the entire year because none of the topics in biology are really one and done. They all build upon each other. An additional related suggestion, make the focus on their functional uses for maintaining life and not their structural components when you're teaching macromolecules. While yes, structure is so important because after all, form dictates function. I know that structure is important and it would be essential for them if they go on to later take AP biology to really understand the structure of the macromolecules. But I think at this foundational biology one level, some of our students get stuck in the weeds when we focus so much on the structure. And really, it's so much more important for them to see how essential these molecules are on a functional level for maintaining life. So I really want to encourage you, teach macromolecules early in your school year, integrate them into every single unit that you have, and really, really focus on their functional purposes and not just their structural components. Okay, my second suggestion of what not to do if you're teaching biology this year is do not teach biochemical reactions on only a micro level. So at my first teaching job, I taught on a team of anywhere from 4 to 5 biology teachers, depending on the semester. And we were required to collect and analyze lots of data, which was extremely tedious and cumbersome. But it was actually helpful because we learned a lot from doing this. And one of the things that we saw across all of our classrooms was that our students were consistently, every semester, because we were on semester block, they were bombing our biochemistry unit. And so that biochemistry unit, it covered macromolecules, enzymes, ATP, photosynthesis, and cellular respiration. So yeah, it was a doozy. Even splitting the unit into two and doing macromolecules, enzymes, ATP, and then doing photosynthesis and cellular respiration, we were still getting test averages in the low 60s. And that is not what we wanted to see at all. Even chunking it up, it just was still too much. And so one teacher brought up the idea of pulling food webs and trophic pyramids out of our ecology unit at the end of the year and teaching those alongside photosynthesis and cellular respiration. Ecology was traditionally our easiest unit with our highest scores for our students. And we like to do it at the end of the year because one, it was a really fun way to end the year. It was a way to boost their grades at the end of the year since it was an easier unit. And it was an easy unit to kind of condense if we were short on time right before the state EOC exam because we could teach it really quickly if we were forced to. But this teacher had the idea of, okay, let's pull this topic of food webs and trophic pyramids out of it. Let's bring it from our easiest unit into our hardest unit. And let's see if that will just help boost the test scores in our hardest unit, our biochem unit, first. But what we found was it was so much richer and better for our students than just simply raising their end of unit test average. Students were actually understanding photosynthesis and cellular respiration as biochemical reactions way better on that micro level when they were seeing the impact that these processes had on a macro level when it came to the transfer of energy from producers to consumers when they were learning about food webs and trophic pyramids. And so this led us to reframing entirely how we structured our course. And instead of having our biochemistry unit that was literally killing our students to start the year every year. We started having an energy flow unit, and we made the focus of the entire unit about how energy flows on every biological level, from the micro level in our cells to the macro level in our ecosystems. And students found so much more success this way. And a little side note here, after we did this, when I moved on to another school and had full autonomy over how I sequence and organize my courses, that's when I actually totally rearranged the energy flow unit, and I pulled macromolecules from there and started teaching them first thing at the beginning of the year. So I do my macromolecules, like I mentioned, in my very first biology basics unit. Then I get into cells. Then we get into energy flow on the micro and macro level. So just a little side note about how I kind of sequence my course. And I will make sure to link in the show notes my biology scope and sequence blog post. And in there, there's a link where you can grab my pacing guide completely for free so you can just see how I organize the whole thing. But this made such a big difference. So not only do I want you to not teach macromolecules in isolation, I want you to also not teach biochemical reactions in isolation and only on that micro level. Teach them alongside your macro level of trophic pyramids and food webs. I promise you it will help your students so much. Another thing, if you're teaching biology this year, I want you to not teach mitosis and meiosis together. If there is one thing I can urge you to do after listening to this episode, it's to never, ever, ever teach mitosis and meiosis together again or in immediate sequence again. Okay? So this is so important to me, which is why I'm saying this with so much emphasis. Okay? Because let me start off with a little confession. When I was student teaching, I don't know if this is how most student teachers get through, but how I survived was I just did whatever my mentor teacher told me to do. It was like drinking out of a fire hose. Whatever he told me to do, I was just going to do it. And when I walked into his classroom, I immediately took over four sections of general freshman biology. And then I later took on his other courses too, but I took over those biology classes right away. And we started out in a cells unit and we did the organelles first. And I was like, okay, this is great. They're doing well. That's because they'd had previous teaching on it in life science. But then he had me jump into a cell division unit, and it was mitosis and meiosis all together. And my students were so confused. And if I'm honest, y'all, I was confused too. I hadn't taken cell biology or anything related to cell biology in over 3 years in my college education. And so I was starting to get things confused, and I was not doing a great job keeping prophase, prophase one, and prophase two straight. So of course, my students were having a really hard time keeping all those things straight. And not only do these two processes have just so many different variations of the same term that you have to keep straight, but we're also expecting students to keep DNA, chromosomes, genes, sister chromatids, and homologous chromosomes, keep all of those terms distinct. And then we're also throwing in diploid and haploid, and their brains are just completely fried. And I don't know about you, but most of us, we're teaching cells and cell division before we're really diving into genetics on a deep level. And so we're having to introduce them to all of these DNA terms, but we really haven't done DNA in a lot of detail. So we're having to give them just enough that they can understand, but it's just a lot. And it's so many terms to keep straight. And my students bombed their tests when I was student teaching. And my mentor teacher encouraged me. He said, this happens to every year. Don't worry about it. It's a great shock to their system to take biology seriously for the rest of the year. And I was not okay with that. I was like, I am so discouraged that they did so poorly and I could have done this so much differently. And so I talked to my advisor in my undergraduate program and he said, why teach the process together again? And so then when I got to my first teaching job, I said, hey, I don't care what we do, because we were in a collaborative environment. We all had to do things the same. I was like, I will follow y'all's lead on everything. But when it comes to cell division, we've got to teach them separate. I refuse to teach them together. And we made that decision and we did it separately. And it was so much better for both me and my students. So I do mitosis in my cells unit and I say meiosis later for my genetics unit. So cells is unit 2 for me, genetics is unit 4. So they're separated, like almost by an entire semester separated. And this was so revolutionary in understanding just for me and my students, not just them, but for me too. Because here's the deal. These processes do not happen in sequence. So why do we teach them one after the other? That doesn't make any sense. They also have entirely different purposes. Thus, if we teach them alongside the content that most closely relates to the purpose of the process, our students have so much more context for what they're learning. Okay, so for example, mitosis. I love to teach mitosis in my cells unit because my cells unit is entirely structured around cell theory and the three tenets of cell theory. So one of those tenets is that all cells come from other cells. So that's when I'm teaching mitosis and I'm teaching them the cell cycle for the first time when we're learning about interphase and I'm introducing them to some of that DNA vocabulary. And we talk about how the cell cycle is regulated and how if that regulation gets off, it can result in uncontrolled cell growth, which is cancer. And so that gives them something really specific and relevant to their lives that they can latch on and they can connect learning mitosis to when they learned about cancer. And it helps them so much to have that context. Then later in the year, when we get into genetics and we start talking about homologous chromosomes and how babies are made truly in our heredity unit, that's when we bring in meiosis. And I remind them of mitosis, but then I teach them meiosis totally separately from that. And it helps them so much more to have it within that context of learning about cancer and regulation, but then also later they learn meiosis when they're learning about babies and reproduction. Distancing them makes it so much easier to see these processes individually in their minds. And then when they're filing this information away in their brains, they're keeping them separate rather than in conjunction with each other. So I really, really encourage you to do that. And again, it's going to help so much with them learning that DNA-related vocabulary as well. Because then when you're teaching mitosis, you can just focus on them getting DNA, chromosomes, and genes differentiated, and also sister chromatids. And then later, a few months later, when you get into heredity and genetics, you can then focus more on homologous chromosomes, diploid, and haploid, and bring those terms to the table. Chunking it up for students in this way makes it so much less overwhelming. Now, if you're listening to this episode and you happen to find it down the road and it's kind of mid-school year, I know you may not be able to change up your unit sequence and how you're lesson planning and organizing all of that, you know, mid-year. But if you are able, if you have yet to cover cell division, I urge you to take the time to make a last-minute change to teach them separately. If there's anything that you do from this, teach those separately. And I'm so passionate about this. I have an entire blog post that's just a rant on why you should teach mitosis and meiosis separately. And so I will make sure to link that in the show notes if you want to keep hearing me go on a long rampage about this, because it just made such a difference for my students to do this differently. And so I want your students to experience it differently too. Okay, the fourth thing I want you to not do if you're teaching biology this year is do not allow misconceptions to fester when you're teaching your evolution unit. I'm going to be honest, I was so nervous to teach evolution for the first time that I was honestly just extremely avoidant in a lot of the areas where I personally didn't feel confident in my knowledge and ability to provide answers for their questions. But I found that over the years, as I kind of grew in my own knowledge, in my own understanding, in my own confidence in teaching evolution, I was able to more aggressively and actively expose and address and correct misconceptions that students had in regards to evolution. And it really just made such a difference in how my students were able to understand biological evolution when I was really weeding out those misconceptions and attacking them early on. I actually like to really do this at the very start of the unit. I have a survey that I give my students that kind of brings to the light kind of 10 of the most common misunderstandings I see in my students year after year. And so I like to do that right away and expose them and say, okay, these are the 10 things that I most often see. What are your thoughts on this? And then we refer back to those survey results throughout the entire unit and kind of debunk each thing. You can grab this survey for free. I will link where you can grab it in the show notes at itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/episode34. And then I'll also link a couple of posts I have about teaching evolution, because I know that can be a really intimidating unit for a lot of teachers teaching biology for the first time. Okay, before I let you go, I know I told you four things not to do. I want to give you three additional tips of things to do and to consider doing this school year if this is your first time teaching biology, because I just love teaching biology and I want you to have such a great school year and be so excited about it, okay? So one thing I want to encourage you with If traditional biology labs aren't working for you and your students, change them. I was really forced to get extremely creative at my most recent teaching gig because I had no lab space and I had no science budget whatsoever. And so this resourcefulness, it really forced me to come up with new ideas and new ways to teach a lot of old topics. And I feel like my students learned a lot of things even better than they were before with the traditional labs I was doing. So I will link in the show notes a blog post with a few examples of some of my favorite lab alternatives for teaching biology that are especially helpful if you are teaching on a budget. Another thing I want to encourage you to do is create space in your unit plans for biology for incorporating phenomena and real-world connections with your students. There are so many amazing real-world connections that are relevant when teaching biology. It is such a fun subject to teach and really engage students in the content. And so make the space and time to do it, even if you can't get through every single standard as perfectly as you want to. I think it's worth it to bring in these real-world connections for our students and really engage them because they're going to remember what you're teaching so much better. And again, I'll link some blog posts in the show notes to help you do that. And last but not least, I just want to encourage you, if you're teaching biology, get your students outside as much as you can. Biology is the study of life after all, and our students spend a lot of time disconnected from real life because they are so overconnected to their screens. So let's get our students outside with clipboards and paper and learning out there and just breathing in some fresh air. I just think biology is such a great subject that lends itself to do that, and I just think it makes such a difference for our students. I really recommend investing in a class set of clipboards so that you have the flexibility to do this at any point. So if like you look outside and you see that the weather is cooperative, grab the clipboards, tell your students to grab whatever they're working on and just take it outside. It will give you and your students so much life when you're teaching this course. And I'll link just a cheap set you can grab on Amazon that I kept in my classroom. I had it for over 6 years and they were great. And you can have those and reuse them with all your different class periods. So I hope if you're teaching biology for the first time that this episode helped to equip you to do it well and to also just enjoy doing it this year. And if you've been teaching biology for years, I hope that this episode challenged you just to maybe think about doing things a little differently this school year. Now, if you've got chemistry, anatomy, or physics on your roster this year, stay tuned because we have more episodes coming ahead this month covering all of those content areas. And as always, just thank you so much for listening to today's episode. You can find all of those links I mentioned in the show notes at itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/episode34. And last but not least, don't forget, this is the last week to enter the giveaway in honor of 10,000 downloads of the Secondary Science Simplified podcast. And you can win a $100 gift card to It's Not Rocket Science Resource Shop and an It's Not Rocket Science Arctic mug. And all you have to do to enter is just share about your favorite episode thus far on the podcast on Instagram. And just go ahead and tag me at It's Not Rocket Science in your entry, and that way I'll be able to see it. And then I will pick a winner on August 15th and DM you so I can get your address to send you all the goodies. Thanks for tuning in, y'all. I'm so grateful for you as always. All right, teacher friends, that wraps up today's episode. If you're looking for an easy way to start simplifying your life as a secondary science teacher, head to itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/challenge to grab your classroom reset challenge. And guess what? It's totally free. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll see you here next week. Until then, I'll be rooting for you, teacher friend.